Okay, we're going to go back in time a little bit here, and we're going to talk again about a topic we talked about a couple weeks ago, and that was the sort of global consequences of the French Revolution. Remember that week before last, we talked about the French Revolution. We talked about one global consequence being the Haitian Revolution, and then the subsequent consequences of the Haitian Revolution in the Caribbean and in the Americas. Well, now we're going to look again at other consequences of the French Revolution. In this case, the independence movements of South America, including the Spanish and Portuguese colonies. Let's start by looking at the South American independence movements, okay? Particularly the independence movements of Colombia and Venezuela, and then in the south of Argentina. Now, the roots of these independence movements or these revolutions were first the Enlightenment. Okay, the same ideals that drove the French Revolution inspired many of the revolutionaries of South America. Now, it just inspired them. It gave them ideas that became important once they gained their independence and they wrote their constitutions. Next root of these revolutions was the fact that the Americans had successfully defeated the British and declared their independence in 1776. So the Declaration of Independence served as an inspiration to the revolutionaries of Spanish America. The French Revolution's documents, the Declaration of Rights of Man and the Citizen, the fact that the French people had overthrown their king, and the documents that they created during the French Revolution served as inspiration for the revolutionaries of Spanish America, particularly because many of the class struggles that took place in the French Revolution were paralleled in the Spanish colonies. Now, the different social classes were defined in different ways and went by different names, but essentially the struggle was the same. Let's review a little bit about social class in the Spanish colonies. Remember that the lowest rung of the totem pole were the Native Americans, who made up a pretty large portion of the population. They were basically the masses, joined by the mestizos, people of mixed Native American and European descent. These were completely disempowered masses. Okay, they did much of the work, they paid the taxes, they were agricultural laborers, mine workers, but they had no influence in government. Then there were the Creoles. The Creoles were kind of like the middle class. They tended to be pretty wealthy. They were Spaniards, but they were born in the colonies. And as a result of being born in the colonies, they had very little political power, if any. Every now and then, depending on the sort of the mood of the king, the Creoles would get some authority, and then they would lose it. But ultimately, the Creoles were very limited in the political power that they held in the Spanish colonies. Most of the political power was in the hands of the peninsulares, the Spanish-born colonists, these people born in Spain who had come to the colonies to work for the king and administer the colonies. And remember that the king gave the power to the peninsulares because he felt like he could trust them. They were closer to home. And he didn't want to turn power over to the Creoles, who he felt like had been so far away from Spain for so long that they couldn't be trusted. So essentially, the peninsulares sort of fill the role of the nobles. If we draw a parallel here, the peninsulares are to the colonies as the nobles are to France. The Creoles are to the colonies as the bourgeoisie are to France. And the mestizos and the Native Americans are to the peasants and urban poor of France. Okay, let me say that over again. The mestizos and the Native Americans are to the colonies as the peasants and urban poor are to France. So we have essentially this same kind of class struggle, which is sort of laying the foundation and will become important as the independence movements move forward. Lastly, and by far most importantly, is Napoleon. When the French Revolution is defeated and Napoleon seizes power in a coup d'etat in France, okay, remember that the French Revolution was not a success. It created a reactionary movement or a movement in which the people really brought back monarchy. They allowed Napoleon to seize power in a coup d'etat, and he ultimately declared himself Emperor of France and went on to conquer pretty much all of continental Europe. This was absolutely 100% key for the independence movements in the Spanish and the Portuguese colonies of the Americas. Okay. Portugal fell to Napoleon I in 1807. When Portugal was taken over by Napoleon, the Portuguese king fled to Brazil, and he set up his government in Brazil, and Brazil became the center of the Portuguese Empire. In 1808, Spain fell to Napoleon, and the king of Spain, Ferdinand, I don't remember his number, Ferdinand VII, was forced to abdicate, and the throne was given to one of Napoleon's cousins. With the Spanish king off the throne, the Spanish people resented Napoleon's cousin, the Frenchman, on the throne, and didn't recognize his authority. So as a reaction to Napoleon's conquest of Spain, the Spanish people formed what's called a Junta Central. Okay, Junta is spelled J-U-N-T-A, and that's going to be an important word. It's like a provisional government or a temporary government. And the purpose of the Junta Central was to administer Spain for the Spanish people until the king was able to return to power. Okay, so the Spanish people refused to recognize the legitimacy of the French king, okay, the cousin of Napoleon. Instead, they created a temporary government for themselves called the Junta Central to administer Spain. Now, this is where problems come in for the colonies. The colonists had considered themselves subjects of the Spanish king, not subjects of the Spanish nation. Okay, it's an important distinction here. They believed that the colonies were under the direct authority of the Spanish king and were not subjects of the Spanish country. So the colonies in Mexico and the colonies in South America were basically the property of the king, not the property of the people of Spain. The Junta Central in Spain was the government that represented the Spanish people. The king was out. So the colonists reasoned that they should create juntas for themselves. Okay? So there should be a junta for Spain, Junta Central, and then there should be a junta for Mexico and a junta for Argentina, which was called Gran Colombia at the time, and a junta for the Viceroyalty of Rio de la Plata. That these, each of the colonies should create their own junta. And this is what they did. Mexico, Venezuela, and Peru each created their own juntas. Okay? The Junta Central in Spain rejected this claim and said that the colonies were under the direct authority of the Junta Central in Spain because it was acting on behalf of the king. And they sent in the Spanish army to violently suppress the juntas that had been established in Mexico, Peru, and Venezuela. The violent suppression of these juntas actually worked against the Spanish government because it inspired nationalism in Venezuela, Mexico, and Peru. The Venezuelan, Mexican, and Peruvian colonists resented the authority of the Spanish junta, the Junta Central, and resented the fact that their move to create a government to act on behalf of the king was suppressed violently. So it actually inspired them to rebel further. The first area to really act on this nationalist fervor is Venezuela. And it's a movement led by Creoles, okay, who feel really rejected by the Spanish authority anyway, because they feel like they have little in common with the Spanish authority. These people have been living in the colonies for many, many years, for generations, in fact. They do not feel like they should be under the authority of some Spanish government other than the Spanish king. So Venezuela in 1811 creates a junta and declares independence. Okay. Now, they made a fatal mistake initially. They did not include the slaves and the people of mixed race in this movement. They did not provide any provisions for freeing the slaves or including the people of mixed race in any future government. As a result, the the government of Spain was able to rally support from the slaves and from the people of mixed race to suppress this Creole movement and seriously threaten the power of this newly independent Junta government. So the Junta, in a desperate attempt to save itself, transferred all of its power to one person, a guy named Simon Bolivar. Okay. Bolivar, being a practical man, realized he needed the support of the slaves and he needed the support of the mixed race people. And so he declared that there would be an end to slavery and that there would be equal representation for all people. In doing this, he gained the support of the slaves, he gained the support of the mixed race people in the fight against the Spanish government. Okay. Not only did he accomplish this, he also allied himself with the independent country of Haiti so that he could bring supplies in to fight his war. So his decision to emancipate the slaves and to bring the free blacks and people of mixed race into this movement accomplished two things. One, it brought a tremendous number of allies from the Spanish side to the side of the Creole Junta. So it brought more people in to the revolutionary independence movement. Second, it gave this new government, this new Junta revolutionary government, a supply line through Haiti. Because, of course, the Haitians are going to support anyone that is going to abolish slavery. Okay, so the Junta is able then to sort of get the upper hand now that they have the support of the slaves, they have the support of the mixed race people, they have the support of the Creoles. So now it's the mestizos, the slaves, the free blacks, the Creoles versus the Peninsulares. The Peninsulares are representing the power of the Spanish government. Okay, which again is in the hands now of the Junta Central instead of the king, because the king has been forced to step down by the French army under Napoleon. Well, that changed in 1814. In 1814, Ferdinand VII, the Spanish king, was able to return to the throne. Napoleon was defeated, and Spain was back under the authority of Ferdinand VII. Very shortly after, within 6 years of Ferdinand VII retaking the throne, there was a revolution in Spain itself, a liberal revolution similar to what had happened in France, but not nearly as extreme. Okay, in this revolution, the Spanish Revolution that occurred in 1820, the king was forced to accept a constitution which limited his power. And he didn't do this easily. He was in fact forced into it. Because the Spanish government and the Spanish king were so distracted with this revolution that occurred in 1820, the rebellion in Venezuela was able to gain the upper hand, and by 1824 to become truly independent from Spain. Okay, so the first thing that weakens Spanish authority in Venezuela is the invasion of Napoleon. Okay, so that starts the movement forward. At first, it's just a Creole movement, but then the Creole movement expands to include slaves and mestizos and the free blacks. Okay, so then the movement expands, and now it's the mixed race people, the slaves, the Creoles versus the Peninsulares. But still, it's an ongoing struggle. Then, in 1820, a revolution occurs in Spain, which weakens the power of the Spanish government and gives the colonists the opportunity to truly gain their independence in 1824. Okay, they declared their independence as Grand Colombia. It was supposed to be this big country which would have included Venezuela, Colombia, and one other area that is escaping me right now, but mostly Venezuela and Colombia. In the long run, they did not remain united, and Colombia and Venezuela each became independent countries. But at first, when they first declared independence, they were united. Similarly, Argentina also was able to declare its independence as a result of Napoleon's invasion of Spain. Remember that Napoleon invaded Spain in 1808. Was able to force the king, Ferdinand VII, off the throne. In 1810, Argentina created a junta. that junta immediately declared its loyalty and swore it to the king, to Ferdinand VII, the deposed king. Okay, so this junta took a different move. Okay, the junta of Venezuela was a Creole movement, was a movement that from the onset wanted independence from Spain. Okay, the Argentinian junta instead immediately declared its loyalty to Spain and to the Spanish king. It was created in 1810. The junta immediately swears its loyalty to the king. Okay? And so, as a result of immediately swearing its loyalty to the king, it isn't threatened by the Spanish government, because this junta is not asking for independence. In fact, it's actually swearing its loyalty to the Spanish state in the form of the king. So there isn't a conflict, really, until the king returns to power. Remember, the king goes, Ferdinand VII gets back on the throne in 1814, and at that point, the junta stops pretending and actually declares its independence in 1816. So a little bit different path, but still the same essential reasons for causes, I guess, of independence, with the invasion of Napoleon being the catalyst to South American independence. Now, again, when Argentina gains its independence, it's not just the modern country of Argentina, it's also the other countries that were once part of the viceroyalty of Rio de la Plata, which was most of the areas in southern portion of South America. Okay, let's go ahead and transition to the next slide, please. Okay, Mexico's independence movement basically shared the same sort of inspirations and foundations as the independence movements of South America, but it was quite different in the social class that led the independence movement. The independence movements of South America were largely led by Creoles. The independence movement of Mexico was really a movement of Native Americans and mestizos. Okay. When the French invaded Spain in 1808 and the king was overthrown, Mexico was Spain's wealthiest colony because of its incredibly productive silver mines. Silver was still being mined like crazy in Mexico. Mexico had the richest silver mines in the world at this point. And so Mexico was still extremely successful as a silver exporting economy. Mexico City was the largest city in the Spanish Empire, larger than any city in Spain. Mexico was under the control of the Peninsulares. They controlled the government of the Spanish colony of Mexico. They controlled the church, and then controlled much of the economy. When Napoleon invaded, the conservative Peninsulares immediately overthrew the viceroy of Mexico because he actually favored the Creoles, which was sort of unusual because, of course, he himself was a Peninsulare, but he was very sympathetic to the Creoles in Mexico. So when Napoleon invaded, the Peninsulares were afraid that the viceroy was going to give some of their power and position to the Creoles. So as soon as they got the opportunity, the Peninsulares of Mexico overthrew the viceroy and seized power. Now, meanwhile, the poor of Mexico, which include the Indians, the majority of the population, and mestizos, a very large portion of the population, were in very, very bad shape. They had been pushed off of most of their land by wealthy Creoles and Peninsulares. As a result, they were really living on marginal land. They had suffered from major crop failures, so they were hungry. And the work that they did have in mines and on other farms was pretty nasty work. They had very bad working conditions. So a sympathetic priest, and I believe he was a mestizo, led a rebellion in 1810, and you can actually see him in the painting on the right-hand side there, Miguel Hidalgo, led a rebellion of Native Americans and mestizos against both the Peninsulares and the Creoles. Now, that was probably a mistake on his part. He probably should have just focused on the Peninsulares and possibly gained the support of the Creoles. But both the Peninsulares and the Creoles were seen as the enemies of the Mexican poor, of the Native Americans and the mestizos. So both the Peninsulares and the Creoles were targeted violently, and many, many were killed. As a result, the Peninsulares and the Creoles united to squash the rebellion. Miguel Hidalgo was captured and executed shortly after. But another priest who worked with Miguel Hidalgo immediately took over the rebellion, and in 1813 actually declared southern Mexico independent, though it wasn't technically really, I wouldn't go as far as to say it was actually independent yet, but he did at least declare independence in 1813. But unfortunately, he was again defeated, and this priest as well was captured and executed. Meanwhile, remember, a revolution occurred in Spain in 1820, a liberal revolution, which forced the king to sign a constitution which limited the power of the king. This scared the conservative Peninsulares, who were wielding most of the power in Mexico. They were afraid that this new constitution would weaken their position in society. So, the Peninsulares of Mexico allied with the mestizos in the Indians. And in 1821, the two sides together declared independence. Okay, so the Peninsulares very quickly changed sides, allied with the rebelling Indians and mestizos, bringing along with them the Creoles, and in 1821, Mexico was declared independent. Now, very different than South America, Mexico was declared independent as an empire, with the leader of the Peninsulares named the Emperor of Mexico. This guy's name was Iturbide. And Iturbide became the first Emperor of Mexico. Mexico remained an empire under the authority of Emperor Iturbide until 1823. So it was pretty short-lived. Mexico didn't remain an empire for long, from 1821 to 1823. In 1823, Iturbide was overthrown, and Mexico became a republic. The colonies of Argentina and Venezuela were declared independent as a republic from the get-go, largely because those independence movements were led by the Creoles, and the Creoles weren't much interested in continuing the authority of a noble class. And remember that, again, in particularly in Venezuela, they had to gain the support of the people of mixed race and the slaves in order to gain independence. So declaring independence as anything but a republic was pretty much unrealistic. However, in Mexico, because the Peninsulares had allied with the mestizos, and the Peninsulares were actually leading independence, it was much more logical that it would be declared independent as an empire with an emperor, I should say. Okay, I'd like you, before you transition to the next slide, to take a look at this painting and see if you can figure out exactly what's going on. It's actually a mural, and again, it's a portrait of Miguel Hidalgo. And see if you can't figure out exactly what the artist is attempting to portray here. Okay, and then go ahead and transition to the next slide. Okay, so we have the South American independence movements led by the Creoles. We have the Mexican independence movement initially led by mestizos, and then actually the final independence movement being an alliance between the Peninsulares and the mestizos. And then we have Brazil, a completely different situation, the independence movement actually being led by the royal family itself. Okay, so again, let's review this, because I really want us to understand the distinction of the the different roles that the social classes played in each of the independence movements. In South America, the independence movements were largely led by the Creole. The resulting independent countries were republics. Mexico, initially it's the mestizos, but later the mestizos and the Indians, I should say. Initially it's the mestizos, the leaders were mestizo, in an alliance with the Indians, and then the Native Americans, I should say. And then they're joined ultimately by the Peninsulares. The Peninsulares, Mestizos, Native Americans, and the Creoles all form an alliance, and Mexico is declared independent as an empire. And then in Brazil, independence is actually led by the royal family. It's the royal family that declares Brazil independent from Portugal. Okay, the royal family, now this is largely because when Napoleon invaded Portugal, the royal family fled to Brazil in 1808. They stayed in Brazil until 1821. By that point, obviously Napoleon was long gone, but the royal family was quite happy to be living in Brazil. But as you know, in Spain in 1820, there was a liberal revolution. The people of Portugal were worried that revolution would spread. The people of Portugal were inspired by that revolution and wanted to hold their own king accountable to a constitution, like the Spanish had forced Ferdinand VII to sign a constitution. So in 1821, the king of Portugal was forced to return to Portugal in 1821. So the king of Portugal returns to Portugal in 1821, and he leaves his son Pedro as the regent of Brazil. So he is back in Portugal as the king of Portugal, and his son Pedro is running Brazil as his regent. A regent is like an assistant or a temporary person who's in charge of something for someone else. Okay. He declares Brazil independent in 1822, largely because the royal family had really developed very close ties with the Brazilian people, much closer ties than they actually had with the Portuguese people, particularly Pedro, because Pedro had been living in Brazil for the last about 20 years, not quite, but just about 20 years. So Pedro, having lived in Brazil for almost 20 years now, had developed very close ties with the Brazilian people and had been sort of distant from the Portuguese people. So because of his close ties with the Brazilian people and his alliances with Brazil, he declares Brazil an independent country in 1822, and it becomes the Empire of Brazil, with Emperor Pedro I as the Emperor of Brazil. He immediately sets to write a constitution, okay, which is interesting. He was a pretty good monarch, actually. 1824, he directs the writing of a constitution which limits his power as emperor and signs it into law. Brazil becomes a constitutional monarchy. If you'll look at the picture to the right, the man that's actually sitting down was one of his chief statesmen, one of his chief sort of assistants, and he helped write the constitution. So the picture you see actually to the left is the founder of the Brazilian country, and they're actually giving credit for creating this sort of independent Brazil to this fella who I can't remember what his name is. It's in the it's not on there. I was going to say it's on the it is Jose Bonifacio. Probably mispronouncing that. It's Portuguese, and I'm no good at that pronunciation. But at any rate, with the assistance, of course, of his statesmen, he writes his constitution, declares Brazil an independent country, and immediately sets about to try and abolish slavery, which actually was a mistake for the royal family. He opposed slavery, and this actually got him in trouble. In 1830, he signed a treaty with Britain outlawing the slave trade. okay, not slavery, but the slave trade. He outlawed the importation of slaves into Brazil. This, of course, freaked out the Brazilian sugarcane plantation owners, who were the wealthiest of the wealthy in Brazil, because they needed the constant importation of slaves. So they basically ignored the law and continued to import slaves until the 1850s. But they, at this point, the wealthiest classes of Brazil do not feel like the king is, or the emperor is, on their side. And then another thing that he did, actually a little bit earlier than signing this treaty with Britain, in 1823, he wrote an anonymous article calling slavery the cancer that was eating away at Brazil. So his efforts to outlaw slavery actually got him in trouble with his own people. Meanwhile, he was actually also fighting a war in Uruguay, which was not particularly going well. It was very expensive. And the combination of his opposition to slavery and the military losses in Uruguay forced Pedro to abdicate. And in 1831, Pedro I stepped down and left the throne to his 9-year-old son. His 9-year-old son became Pedro II, Emperor of Brazil. He ruled Brazil until 1889. At that point, the monarchy was abolished and Brazil became a republic. Okay. Now, what's interesting about the creation of Brazil as a country, or more importantly, as a nation, as an identity, is the sort of combining of cultures that occurred in Brazil. But it occurred also in much of the rest of Spanish America and the Caribbean. I think that the etching on the right side does a great job demonstrating this. As I said, the guy sitting down is sort of the Benjamin Franklin, I guess, of Brazil, the guy who's sort of responsible for writing the Constitution and forming the government of Brazil. He's sort of like the founding father, I guess. And then what you have sort of in the line leading up to him are the Brazilian people. First, you have the African slave, then the Native American, then that's actually Pedro I representing the Portuguese people. And then I'm not quite sure who's off in the distance. He might also be representative of the Portuguese people, perhaps of like the lower class of the Portuguese people, or perhaps the mestizo. I'm not 100% sure. My guess would probably be a mestizo. But all lined up there, coming to the founding father, you know, sort of helping to form the country of Brazil. And that's actually a really great representation of what Brazil actually ultimately becomes. Brazil does truly become a blend of these different cultures. Okay, so that finishes it up for today. That's all.